Mrs. Edgley, reel 2.
You told me that from about March 1914 you were going into the hospital for, say, a week at a time.
Yes.
When did you begin working full-time?
I think it was the end of the year. And then, I put my name down for volunteering for the next year, and then was sent to 4th Northern General.
Did you plan to work as a VAD for the whole war?
No, I did toy with the idea of... I was travelling home once when I had my day off with a sister, and she said, why on earth don't you go in for your proper training and done it? Because if you'd done a year, you see, they took that year off. And she said, I started as a VAD like that, and then I thought, well, I might as well do the same thing and take my extra training for 2 years. And I almost decided I would do so. Then it just happens that, I don't know, something or other came along and I didn't get it done. But I always wished I had afterwards.
When you became a full-time VAD, you were sent to the 4th Northern
yes.
General Hospital at Lincoln.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Was your husband and parents still living in Nottingham?
Well, of course, my father had died. Then my mother, she came to live in Nottingham for a time. Then she went up to Edinburgh to be near my other brother. And then, of course, my in-laws, they were bombed out, you see. And so we had a little house there. And so they came to live there and look after my husband, you see. I would get, when I had my whole day off, so you had a day and a night, and you had to be on duty first thing in the morning, so I used to go home there just for the 24 hours. But, you got that once a month.
What did your husband and family think of you going off to Nottingham?
Oh, they quite agreed with it. I mean, they thought parents-in-law, they said, well, that was their little bit that they could do for the war, you see, to look after the place for me and look after my husband. And so they took it as their bit of war work that they did. They didn't mind a bit.
Were there any requirements for becoming a full-time VAD?
Oh, you had to, of course, have passed certain exams and some advanced ones as well. And according to sort of what your qualifications were, so they put you into these certain wards. Well, they put me into the accident ward straight away, you see. And if any new one came along, although we weren't supposed to, we were supposed to be all alike, but you were the head one, really, of them. But we were, all worked together very happily. Of course, as I said, when I first went there, we had orderlies, and we had two staff nurses and two VADs to each ward. Eventually, after a month or two, the orderlies went, and then one staff nurse went, and then another VAD was less, because they were getting more hospitals, and more of the staff nurses were going overseas, you see, to the CCSs, and so we gradually got down to in a 50-bedded, there were 50-bedded wards each end of the duty room in the middle. There was one sister over the two, and one staff nurse each side, and two VADs. When one staff nurse was off, she had two wards to do. And there's one VAD in each ward, and they're off duty, you see. So it was a pretty hectic time, especially if it was early morning, having to do beds. And eventually, you had to do all the dressings on your side, practically. I often think of what I did in those days. I wouldn't dream of letting you do nowadays in hospital.
How had you learned to do the appropriate dressings for all the different rooms?
Well, of course, you went round first of all with the staff nurse, you see, and took the trolley round and helped her. And then she might say, well, look, let me see you do so-and-so's dressing today, because you can take him on if you manage it. Because it was an awful lot, you see, 50 patients, one staff nurse and one VAD. And eventually, I suppose she thought I was good. Well, of course, that's where your previous training in the hospital, I mean, accidents and so on, stood you in good stead. And I usually did nearly all of those on my side. And, of course, at night duty, you see, you had... sometimes you had to do special duty with one person, one man. When you weren't doing dressings, you were sitting by his side all the time. If he was very dangerously wounded, you see. I mean, you might hemorrhage, as one of them did one time.
Then what do you do?
Well, had to dash to the duty room and call the nurse from the other ward, and then dash to the table and fetch a tourniquet and that, and put it round until she came, you see. Then she would tighten it up. And we had to do that quite a lot of times, because they would break down. They were pretty bad ones, you've seen. They would break down and start to bleed in the middle of the night, which is very awkward.
Were these men who had had amputations?
Yes, a lot of them were, yes. Yes, as you saw from those pictures, we had quite a lot, really, with just one leg, one or the other.
The 4th Northern General Hospital was built specially for the...
No, war. It was a newly built boys' school, something like Wellington School, for instance, or any of these other big schools. And I think it had only been going for about a year. It was quite new. And the army took it over, you see. And then they'd got big playing fields behind, so they built all the huts on the, gradually as they were required, they built the huts on the playing fields until they got, about 2,500. And then they had to put tents, you see, up.
Were the tents as large as the 50
beds? Well, you
bed?
Get about... or four, about 10 beds in there, five or perhaps on each side, and the stove in the middle with a hole through the roof of it, and a sister's table with all the equipment on it, and perhaps a locker and place where you lock the medicines up and dressings and so on. And that's about all you could get in there.
Would you stay with one tent or one hut for a period of time, or would you be likely to be anywhere?
No, you had you stayed at least a month in one ward, sometimes 2 months, probably more often than not 2 months, because they were heavy wards, you see, and heavy going, and you'd just get into the work, so you didn't have to move you too long, too often. And then perhaps you would go from there into a sick ward, you see, where they used to have all mixed up, TB, malaria, jaundice, oh goodness, and how we never caught any of the things, I don't know, because we were never, they didn't bother with you at all, and you had to use your common sense and use your own precautions.
Which did you prefer, medical or surgical?
Oh, surgical. I like surgical better than any.
Why is that?
Well, I like the mending of people, if you can call it that. I do now. I mean, accidents and that kind of thing don't worry me a bit.
These were men straight from the front.
Straight, yes. They came, they went through a CCS, casualty clearing station,
yes.
And perhaps they'd have just one dressing put on there. On their bare wounds, and put on the train again. They landed at Lincoln Station and brought straight up to the hospital with all the clothes that they'd been wearing for the last 6 weeks or more, probably, without a wash or anything of that sort. You'd have to peel it off them. So I think I told you one man, after he'd been washed and dressed, and he said he thought he must be in heaven. Of course, he was, I think he was slightly delirious. So I said, oh, you'll find some down-to-earth nurses tomorrow morning when you wake up. all kinds, of course. Some of them, you know, really rough men that had been perhaps territorials before and went straight into the army and that. And they were, many of them were older men too. But they were awfully good. I mean, they would watch the language and do everything they could to help you. If they liked you, they would.
What were the most common sorts of wounds and illnesses that you had to deal with?
Shrapnel wounds of every kind. Of course, that fellow thought he was in heaven. He eventually had to have his leg off and take it into this big tent, and they'd be sawing his leg off there, and you would be seeing an operation on an eye or something there, and another one for something, perhaps a chest wound, and it'd be open there. How the infection ever got around, I don't know, but they had to do the best they could, of course, same as they had to do in the trenches and so on. They were always most grateful for anything you did to alleviate, because they were very nasty wounds, many of them. Some, of course, put them out entirely. I mean, they would never regain the movement or anything of that sort again. Got that, of course, the second Southern General, where they had 2,000 men there, and they had to send them somewhere if they couldn't send them home. And of course you couldn't send them all to Cheshire homes because there weren't many. So they had to wait until perhaps there was a vacancy in the hospital in their hometown or something of that sort. That's why they were so long after the war had finished, you see. As I went on till July 1919.
Had you ever seen such serious cases before the
no,
war hospital?
No, not with some of them. Some of them were terrible.
Did you find that difficult?
No, I don't know. I had a sort of I suppose, inbuilt sort of organisation that could put up with anything, blood or anything, that sight of that. Some people, of course, simply go off themselves. Sometimes the VADs couldn't do all the things, but it never worried me at all.
Did the patients have visitors?
Yes, once a week they could have visitors, but very many of them didn't have them because their people, I mean, some of them were perhaps up north, you see, some were Scotland or Wales and so on. And they couldn't afford the people, the wives and that, to come. Perhaps, and usually, more often, they would come once a month. And they could come for the day, if they allow, or according to the what the patients were like. Sometimes they would say, well, you can talk for an hour, and then perhaps you'll go into the duty room or have a walk round the grounds or something, and then come back again. So as to give them a respite from talking, you see.
Was it upsetting for the visitors to come and see what condition?
Oh, sometimes, of course, they sometimes there were upsetting scenes, you know, especially the first time a wife came or anything of that sort. Of course, they wouldn't see a lot of their wounds, I mean, or if they had legs off and that kind of thing, they wouldn't see any of that, but they would know about it and ask questions and so on, and you would be bombarded with questions. But they were very well looked after and very well fed, a great deal better than we were. And
were the wives or parents taken aside and explained to the medical condition of their son?
Well, if the husbands were perhaps rather badly wounded and couldn't stand talking perhaps more than a quarter of an hour, the sister would take them into the duty room, you see, and just explain to them. that if they stayed for about a quarter of an hour, then perhaps they'd say, well, I'm going to have a walk around now and have a look around and make the excuse like that, not to let them know it was there because of them, you see. You had to be diplomatic. And, of course, sometimes the wives were a little bit, upset. So if you found they were upsetting the patients, you would have to say, oh, would Mrs. So-and-so come along to the duty room for a bit? And then you would suggest perhaps she had a walk round the grounds, because there were flower beds and things round the huts, you know, and some of the patients that were better would like to perhaps help in, you know, looking after the flowers and so on.